I have to be honest with you. I stepped outside this morning to grab the mail, just a 30-second trip, and it is firmly the dog days of summer out
Oh,
there.
yeah.
It is hot, it's sticky, the air is just thick enough to chew on. And the last thing, I mean, the absolute last thing on my mind was putting on heavy rubber boots and trekking into the deep woods.
I know exactly what you mean. It is really hard to get into that crisp, that November rut mindset when the thermometer's threatening to hit 90.
Exactly. It feels like a different universe. But then I looked at the calendar
Uh-oh.
and I had this specific moment of panic, absolute panic, because for whitetail hunters, the clock isn't just ticking, it is practically sprinting.
It sneaks up on you. It does. Every single year, you think you have all the time in the world in June. You think, I've got months.
You really do. You think, oh, I'll get out there when it cools down. But we looked at the dates, and in some states, opening day for bow season is less than 60 days away.
That is right around the corner. And if you think about it, the deadline to get your stands up and, more importantly, to leave them alone so the area settles down, well, that's basically right now.
It is crunch time. I feel like this happens to me every single year. You scout in the late season, January, February, you see those trails, you spot those perfect bedding areas, and you tell yourself, I am going to hang a stand right there in March.
And then life moves on.
Life drags you with it. Winter turns into turkey season turns into family vacations, and suddenly it's August. You're sweating through your shirt just thinking about it, and you realize you are woefully behind schedule. So that is exactly what we are digging into today. We have a deep dive that is effectively an intervention for procrastinating hunters like me.
It's a bit of a wake-up call, but a helpful one. We're looking at a really comprehensive guide from the American Hunting Lease Association, the AHLA, titled Five Mistakes You Do Not Want to Make.
And the mission here is simple. How do we maximize the preparation now in the heat so we don't ruin the hunt in November when it actually counts?
Precisely. Because nothing is worse than ruining a hunt before you even climb the tree. It's about mechanics. If we get the mechanics right now, the rest falls into place.
Okay, let's unpack this. The first mistake on their list is actually the one that scares me the most, mostly because I look back at how I used to do things, 15 or 20 years ago, and I physically
I
cringe.
think we all do.
The mistake is simply ignoring safety.
This is the non-negotiable. It has to be the foundation. And honestly, looking at the data included in the source, it is shocking that we still have to have this conversation. But we do. The numbers don't lie.
I think we have all been there or at least seen it. It's that old school macho attitude, hanging from a branch by one arm like a monkey, trying to ratchet a stand with the other.
Which is frankly inexcusable today. The AHLA is very clear on this. I mean, tree stand safety gear has improved by giant leaps and bounds in the last decade. There's absolutely no reason to be risking your life.
But people still do it. We see it every season. Oh, I'm just going up 10 feet. I'll be fine.
They do. And here is where it gets sobering. The article drops stats from the Tree Stand Safety Awareness Foundation. They found that 85% of all hunters injured in falls were not wearing a harness.
85%. That is a massive number.
It is.
Basically, if you fall and you get hurt, almost 9 times out of 10, it's because you simply weren't clipped in.
You made a choice not to wear the gear. It's preventable. But here is the statistic that really caught my attention, and I think it surprises a lot of experienced hunters. There is this pervasive myth that climbing stands are safer because they surround you. You feel like you're in a little cage, right?
Yeah, exactly. You have the bar around your waist, your feet are strapped in. It feels secure compared to, say, a lock-on stand.
Well, according to the data, 25% of all falls happen from climbing stands.
Really? A quarter of all falls. That seems incredibly high for something that feels so secure.
It is high, and the source breaks down why. It's usually mechanical failure or human error. Think about the mechanics. Straps break, tubing snaps, bolts come unscrewed.
Or the arms of the stand just break under stress.
That's a terrifying thought. You're 30 feet up, and the metal just gives way. Just because you have a bar around you doesn't mean gravity stops working if the metal fails.
I've definitely sat in a climber and thought, I don't need to clip in yet. I'm safe inside the rails. I think a lot of us have that false sense of security.
And that's the fatal mistake. The mantra has to be stay connected. From the moment you leave the ground until your feet touch the dirt again.
So what is the solution here? Because I'll play devil's advocate. Hanging a lock-on stand while wearing a full harness can be a real pain if you don't have the right gear. It feels clumsy.
It used to be a hassle, I'll grant you that. But the source highlights how gear has evolved to solve specifically that clumsiness problem. They mention the hanger harness from Hunter Safety Systems.
I've seen these listed. They're different from your standard safety vest, right?
Yeah, they are. They're designed specifically for the job of hanging stands. They have deep pockets, heavy-duty hooks for your steps, your straps. It makes the job infinitely easier because you aren't fumbling around 20 feet up.
It turns you into a utility belt, basically, like Batman in the woods.
Exactly. But the most critical piece of gear they mention, and if you take one thing away from this safety section, it should be, this is the tree safety rope.
Okay, let's deep dive on this. Explain how this works for someone who hasn't used one.
Right. This is a game changer for the ascent and descent. It's a lifeline. You attach this rope at the bottom of the tree before you even start climbing. It runs all the way up. It uses a Prusik knot or a sliding mechanical clip that moves up the rope with you.
So the knot slides up easily if you push it, but if you jerk it like in a fall, it locks tight.
Instantly. It cinches down on the main rope. So you are connected to the tree from the ground up. You never have a moment, not even for 1 second, where you are untethered.
So if a step breaks or your hand slips, you just catch on the rope.
You hang there. You don't fall. It turns a potential tragedy into just a scary moment.
That seems like a no-brainer. Okay, so we are strapped in. We are safe. Now we have to decide where to actually put the stand. And this brings us to mistake number two. Hang them too high.
The nosebleed section mentality.
I am absolutely guilty of this, especially when I was younger. I thought, if I go higher, they can't smell me, they can't see me. The source calls this out as a trait of the youth of today's hunting world. Thinking higher is always better.
It's a common assumption. You think elevation equals invisibility, but physics disagrees. The source makes a really compelling argument against going too high, specifically advising against anything past 25 feet.
What happens after 25 feet? Why is that the cutoff point?
Well, the geometry starts to work against you significantly. First, consider the shot angle. If a deer is at, say, 20 yards and you are 30 or 35 feet up, the angle of that arrow is incredibly steep.
Right, you're shooting almost straight down through the animal.
And that diminishes your window for a double lung shot. You know, the gold standard. If the angle's too steep, you might get one lung or hit the spine. That clean vital zone effectively shrinks the higher you climb.
That makes total sense. You're turning a basketball-sized target into a tennis ball. But there's another factor they mentioned that I hadn't really thought about. The canopy illusion.
This is a classic summer mistake. Picture this. You are standing in the woods right now, in August. The trees are full of leaves.
Right. It looks like a solid wall of green. You think, I'm hidden.
But the source points out that in mature timber, once you get past 25 feet, that canopy isn't just from one tree. It's a mix of limbs from multiple neighboring trees.
Oh, I see where this is going. It's a mesh.
Exactly. In the summer, you can't tell which limb belongs to which tree. But come November, the leaves drop, and suddenly you realize that the shooting lane you thought you had is blocked by a giant branch from a
different tree. A tree you can't trim from where you are.
Exactly. You're stuck. You have to move the stand, which means noise and sweat, or you have to climb a second tree. It's a mess.
A nightmare scenario. Mm-hmm. So what's the rule of thumb here to avoid this trap?
The AHLA suggests the 30-foot rule. It's very practical. Buy a 30-foot safety rope, attach it to the tree, and simply do not outclimb it. If you're at the end of the rope, you're high enough.
I like that. It's a hard stop. It keeps you honest. Okay, speaking of the canopy, that leads right into stake number three, over-trimming.
This is a big one. The concept here is simple. You can always trim more later, but you can't put it back.
It's like a bad haircut. Once it's gone, it's gone.
Exactly. And the trap here is the desire for information. As hunters, we want to see everything. We want to see the does, the young bucks. We want wide lanes.
I definitely get that. Sitting in a tree staring at a wall of leaves is boring. You want that panoramic view.
But the risk is opening a window so large that by the time November rolls around and the foliage is gone, you are sitting in the wide open with zero cover. You're just a blob on a stick.
You've created a stage for yourself, basically. Here I am.
And the deer will spot you instantly. The source shares a really relatable moment cutting a branch just so you can climb up comfortably, only to realize once you sit down that that specific branch was the only thing breaking up your silhouette.
Oh, that hurts. That is the worst feeling. You sit down and realize I am completely exposed. So how do we avoid getting scissor happy?
You have to change your perspective.
Yeah.
Literally, don't just look from the tree. The source advises going down to the ground, walk to where you expect the deer to appear, and take a wide angle look. back at your setup.
See what the deer sees.
Exactly. What does it look like to them? If you can see your whole stand clearly from the trail in August, you are going to be glowing neon in November.
That is great advice. Less is more.
Okay, moving on to mistake number 4. This one is about mindset. The mistake is hang it like it's the final spot.
This is the analysis paralysis trap, trying to find the absolute perfect magical tree on the first try. I think we do this because hanging a stand is hard work. It's heavy, it's sweaty. We want to be one and done.
Of course. No one wants to move a stand twice. But the source reminds us of a biological reality. Summer patterns are not fall patterns.
Right. What they are eating now is not what they are chasing in the rut.
Exactly. The sign you see now, it's valid, but it will shift. Acorns will drop, the rut will kick in. So the expert insight here is that the goal isn't perfection immediately. It's proximity.
Proximity. Just get in the game.
Especially if it's a new lease. You don't know the micro movements yet. The source says to pick a safe tree near the sign that requires minimal trimming. Treat it as an ambush point that will evolve.
So go into it expecting to move. Don't marry the tree.
Yes. If you acknowledge up front that I will likely move this stand, you take the pressure off, you hang the set, you observe, and then you adjust. It's a dynamic process.
That is actually really freeing. It stops you from wandering around the woods for 4 hours looking for the perfect tree.
Precisely. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Get in the woods.
Okay, this last mistake. This one hit home for me. I think this is the number one reason people burn out a hunting spot. Mistake number 5. Access may be king, but egress needs love too.
Egress. The art of getting out.
We spend hours planning how to sneak in. We obsess over our approach. But we rarely plan how to get out when the sun goes down.
And that is where the damage is done. The scenario the source paints is classic. You get in undetected. You have a great sit. But at dusk, the field in front of you fills up with deer.
And now they are a blockade between you and your truck. You are trapped.
And you have a choice. Wait them out for hours or climb down and spook them.
And if you spook them...
If you bump deer leaving the field, especially repeatedly, they learn that pattern. The source puts it bluntly. They will not tolerate it long. You are teaching them that this field is dangerous.
So what are the solutions? Because sometimes you just have to get home. The source actually gives some really creative ideas here.
They do. The first is terrain-based. Use the land. Look for an old creek bed or a ditch that lets you slide out and walk around the field.
It might add 20 minutes to your walk, but it saves the spot.
Exactly. It keeps the pressure off. But the really interesting tips are for when you have no terrain cover.
This is the part I thought was genius, the coyote howl.
This is a great trick. If you are stuck in a tree with deer in the field, let out a coyote howl.
Why does that work better than just climbing down? Won't that scare them too?
It scares them, but differently. Deer hear coyotes every single night. It's a natural sound. It alerts them, they'll clear the area, but they don't associate it with human pressure.
So they leave, but they don't change their overall pattern because of it. They aren't thinking hunter, they are thinking predator.
Right. It clears the stage for you to escape without burning the stand. It's a biological hack.
That is clever. And they had one more option, the buddy system.
This requires a willing friend. If you can, have someone drive a truck up to the field edge and shine the headlights.
An old pickup move.
It works because deer are far more used to machinery and pickup trucks than they are to a human walking on two legs. They will move off for the truck, you slip out, and you're gone.
That requires a good friend, though. You gotta bribe them with pizza.
Or promise to do the same for them next time.
True. So, pulling this all together, we've got safety, height, trimming, mindset, and egress. What is the big picture here?
The mission, as we stated at the start, is to look at the whole picture. It's easy to hyper-focus on one thing, like being in that specific oak tree. But if you ignore safety, or you ignore how you're going to get out of that tree, the hunt fails.
It's a system. You can't just pick the parts you like.
It is. And honestly, this brings up a provocative thought based on the source's conclusion. They mention that to harvest a deer, several things have to go right. But only one thing has to go wrong to derail the entire hunt.
That is a stressful thought. The margin for error is slim.
But flip it. Are you focusing too much on the harvest, the end result, and not enough on the mechanics that make it possible? If you nail the mechanics, the harvest becomes a byproduct of good process. If you ignore the mechanics, you're just gambling.
I love that. Focus on the process, not just the prize. Well, look, the season is creeping up. The clock is ticking. My challenge to you listening right now, don't wait. Get your harness on. Seriously, get the harness and get out there.
Stay connected.
Exactly. And just a reminder, all these great tips came from the American Hunting Lease Association. For more specifics on safety, you should definitely check out treestandsafetyawareness.org.
It's a great resource.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you in the woods, hopefully strapped to a tree.
Stay safe.
Catch you next time.